From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's archive edition of Fresh Air, we revive some delightful but forgotten songs from the 20s and 30s. By popular request, we feature our concert and interview with pianist Peter Minton. Some of the songs he sings and plays are so forgotten that even the composers don't remember them. Minton is a favorite at sophisticated piano bars in Manhattan and San Francisco. Peter Minton sings and plays, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. A mistrial has been declared in the case of two white policemen in Pittsburgh who were accused of killing a black motorist. The judge issued the order today, saying a prosecution witness may have prejudiced the jury. The two officers were charged with involuntary manslaughter in the death of Johnny Gamage, who was pulled over as he drove home in a car belonging to his cousin, Pittsburgh Steelers defensive end Ray Seals. The officers claim Gamage died in a freak accident when he was pinned to the ground during a traffic stop. A new trial will begin in 2 months. President Clinton is back in Washington after a post-debate campaign swing through California. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
The Clinton campaign is confident that the last debate did nothing to change the president's commanding lead in the polls over Bob Dole. Now Mr. Clinton must decide how to spend his time and money during the next 2.5 weeks. Campaign aides say the president will look for votes in traditionally Republican areas and try to help elect more Democrats to Congress. Yesterday, Mr. Clinton campaigned in conservative Orange County, California. Next week, he heads to Republican strongholds in Florida, Louisiana, and Alabama. Last night in Hollywood, the president raised millions of dollars to be used by Democratic congressional candidates. He appeared at a $500-a-head fundraiser on the back lot of Universal Studios. In keeping with the president's campaign metaphor, building a bridge to the future, he spoke to the crowd standing on the stage set used to film the movie Back to the Future. In Washington, I'm Mara Liasson.
Reports from Afghanistan say Taliban rebels attacked forces of an opposition leader with heavy mortar fire today just north of the capital city of Kabul. The fighting is said to be centered around a strategic airbase. NPR's Vicky O'Hara reports.
A UN security official based in Islamabad says the style of fighting has changed to guerrilla warfare, village to village, with control of different areas frequently changing hands. Alan Bremelo says the Taliban apparently still holds the important Bagram airfield. That's where the fiercest fighting is said to be underway. He says defending the airfield is costly, and he suggests that the opposition is not going all out to take it for that reason. Bremelo also says demonstrations took place in Kabul yesterday and today, a show of support for the Taliban and its strict imposition of Islamic law. The UN official says both men and women participated in the demonstrations, which were nonviolent and apparently sanctioned by the Taliban. I'm Vicky O'Hara in Washington.
The U.S. trade deficit narrowed slightly in August to $10.8 billion, but the Commerce Department says the deficit with China reached an all-time high thanks to American demand for Chinese toys and Christmas lights. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 8.5 points in active trading. The Nasdaq Composite Index is down 3.5. This is NPR. Palestinian negotiators say Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's inner circle is blocking an agreement on the withdrawal of Israeli troops from the West Bank city of Hebron. The Palestinians say Israel has backed off agreements apparently reached in discreet top-level talks. Israeli officials say a deal concerning the last West Bank town under Israeli occupation is within reach, but the Palestinians have rejected that assessment. The Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee is closing, putting 250 people out of work and leaving the city with just one major beer company. Marge Pitroff of member station WUWM in Milwaukee reports.
The Pabst Brewing Company is older than the city itself, 152 years. Pabst was once an industry leader and one of about five major brewers located in Milwaukee, giving the city the reputation of beer capital of the country. But the Pabst closing will leave the city ninth in terms of brewing capacity, with Miller the only major brewing company remaining. Earlier this year, Pabst transferred about two-thirds its Milwaukee work to G. Heilemann in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where production is cheaper. The remaining work will also now be transferred to that plant, which has been purchased by Stroh. Pabst executives say the Milwaukee division was losing more money than anticipated. Several months ago, the company made headlines by cutting off health and death benefits for 750 retirees, also citing financial reasons. For National Public Radio, I'm Marge Pitroff in Milwaukee.
Hurricane Lily has been pounding Cuba with torrential rains and wind gusts of up to 115 miles an hour. Scores of aging buildings in downtown Havana were toppled by the storm. Some refugees in the city found shelter in the presidential palace, where Cuban President Fidel Castro welcomed them. The storm is expected to move through the Florida Straits today on a track that would take it into the Bahamas. Forecasters say Florida will probably get no more than a glancing blow. I'm Craig Windham, National Public Radio News in Washington.
Support for Fresh Air comes from Moro, publisher of the new cookbook, Baking with Julia. Savor the joys of baking with America's best bakers, based on the PBS series hosted by Julia Child. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're about to be treated to some delightful but forgotten songs from the 20s and 30s. My guest Peter Minton knows thousands of songs from old movies and shows and plays them in the piano styles of their times. He recently started singing as well. Minton lives in San Francisco, where he plays at Mason's Restaurant at the Fairmont Hotel. He also performs several months a year in New York at Bimmelman's Bar at the Carlyle, the hotel where Bobby Short has performed for many years. Minton has a new CD called Grand Piano. When we first broadcast his Fresh Air concert and interview last spring, we got a great response, so we're bringing it back for this archive edition. Peter Minton, welcome to Fresh Air. It's a pleasure to have you here in our studio.
Thank you very much.
Now, I want to ask you to open with a real tour de force. And this is I Won't Dance, a song Fred Astaire sang in which movie?
This is from the film version of Roberta. And Astaire sings this to Ginger Rogers. And I like it because I kind of use every single key on the piano, and I stole this arrangement from a piano roll from 1935.
Oh, let's hear it. Fantastic. Oh, what a workout that must be.
Yes, don't ask me to play that again.
No, you say you learned that from a piano roll. Did you do it by ear?
Yes, I did. I beg, steal, and borrow arrangements because I love to collect period recordings, whether it be a film soundtrack or 78 RPM record or piano rolls, too. And that's when I lifted from a 1935 roll. I mean, that was part of it. You can hear the rest of it on my recording.
It seems to me that there's all kinds of, I don't know, arpeggios and trills and runs and stuff that people don't do like that anymore. Pianists don't play like in that language anymore.
You bet. That's absolutely true. In fact, the trend seemed to be after World War II for things to get kind of condensed like this. Very close together, block chords. Like, here's, if this song would have been recorded maybe in 1950. Get what I mean?
Yeah. Now tell me how the period of the 20s and 30s became your period.
Well, when I was growing up, my parents were still listening to the records they could get of people like Fats Waller, and they loved Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller and even Guy Lombardo, heck, dance music and film and show music. And then I started to find old magazines, and I'd open up like a magazine from 1923, and I'd look and I'd see these ads for incredible-looking cars and incredible-looking movie ads and shaving lather ads, and everything just sort of jumped out at me and said, this is fabulous. And I just got intensely interested in it at a young age. And I always had this kind of secret desire to drive a 20s car and live in a 20s house and have a 20s stove and refrigerator and this and that and play 20s music. And eventually I got more modern, went into the 30s.
Now, part of your repertoire includes novelties from the period, novelty piano pieces.
Yes, that's a big part of the 20s. And I think it all is sort of rooted in Felix Arndt's piece Nola in 1915. One of those light little pieces in the key of D, so the fingering is easy. Those are just, it's easy fingering when it's in D usually for some reason. You couldn't do it the same in C. But it's just a part of the era, and that sound is part of the era. Like, you know, Rube Bloom, who was Ruth Etting's accompanist, he uses these little licks like this. Like it. Part of the novelty craze, and I think the person who wrote the most sophisticated ones was Zez Confrey.
Why don't you do one of his novelties, like Kitten on the Keys, which is maybe his most famous one?
That's right. You know, I was really lucky. One night while I was playing in New York, I got a request on a business card, and it said, Kitten on the Keys. Well, I turned the card over, and it said, Paul Confrey. And it turned out it was Zez Confrey, the composer's own son.
Wow.
And he was so thrilled, and I played a bunch of other Confrey pieces, too. But Kitten on the Keys has some pretty fabulous sections. It's a long piece, but I'll just show you parts of it.
That's delightful. It's a real cousin of ragtime in a way, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, is. It is an outgrowth of that. And has great whimsy and humor. And in the 20s, the 1920s was the height of the piano sales in this country. It has never been as high as it was then. And player pianos were a large percentage of that, too. So if you could play a little novelty like Kitten on the Keys or Dizzy Fingers or Greenwich Witch or Nola or something like that at a party, well, you'd be chained to the bench for the rest of the evening.
What are some of the things happening musically in the songs of the 20s and 30s that don't happen in most contemporary music? Like, musically, technically, what would you say are some of the differences?
Well, I would say some very adventurous chord changes are going on. And it got more and more sophisticated as the 30s came in. There were so many songwriters writing in the commercial music business at that time that it was highly competitive. And so they were always trying to outdo each other, and not only each other, but outdo themselves. I mean, Irving Berlin had already had dozens and scores of popular songs, but he continued to outdo himself by writing more and more sophisticated things. Just to think that the man who in 1915 had written this... in 1936 wrote this. So what can I say? They kept trying everything.
Much to my delight, Peter Mitten, you've lately started singing as well as playing piano. So I must impose on you now to sing one of the songs that you've resurrected from the 20s or 30s. And I know one of the for some reason, and you can explain why, you seem to be particularly interested in music that came from Shirley Temple movies. Now, how many people can say that?
Well, it's not an obsession, let me reassure you. It's just that, well, she made many movies. Nearly all of them were musicals. And she had some of the top writers, and the songs that they wrote for Shirley were not only good, but there are songs that her co-stars sang that are excellent tunes that I think have been unjustly neglected. And so I like to bring them out of the treasure trunk of music.
Why don't you redeem one of those tunes for us?
Well, this one is by a living composer named Harold Spina, who lives in Hollywood, and actually, this song was never published. It's from the movie Little Miss Broadway, which she made in 1938. And it's called We Should Be Together. She does it with George Murphy. And here is the manuscript version that is not in the film. Darling, you're my inspiration. We're a natural combination. We should be together like bread and butter. We should be together like a putt and putter. Like corned beef goes with cabbage and lamb with stew. How lucky I am that I go with you. We should be together like rhyme and reason, like a coat and muffler when the weather's freezing, like June and moon in every popular tune. Baby, you're a cup of coffee, I'm a piece of pie. We should be together, you and I. We should be together like rhyming couplets. We should be together like the five quintuplets. Where would a captain be without any crew? And where would I be without any you? We should be together like steak and onions, like the guys and gals of Mr. Damon Runyon's, like double chins or even Siamese twins. Baby, you're a cane and hi-hat, I'm a white bow tie. We should be together, you and I.
That's just delightful.
Well, that's by Harold Spina, and the lyrics by Walter Bullock.
If this lyric was unpublished, how do you know it?
Well, I know it because I visited Harold at his house, and he dragged out some of these scores, and he showed me. And I said, gee, how can I get a copy of that? And he said, well, here, take it down to Kinko's.
Now, songs followed a certain structure in the 20s and 30s. There was the verse and then the chorus. Some of these songs came out of movies and shows. Was the verse a way to get from the talking part of the movie or the show into the singing part, a kind of transitional period?
Well, that's a good question. It may have originated in show music, but it was the standard for nearly every song of that period to have several parts. The intro, which is a simple thing like... that's an intro. Then there's a vamp. which you play until the singer is ready to come on in. Then there's the verse to a song, like in the classic example would be like the beat, beat, beat of a tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. Now, most people know that is the verse to Night and Day, You Are the One. But they shouldn't be separated. I think they make the song complete. They make the whole thought complete and whole. And so I like to do as many verses as I can.
My guest is Peter Minton. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Peter Minton is at the piano to perform more forgotten songs from the 20s and 30s. Now, when did you start singing?
June.
Just about a year ago. Why? Mm. What made you decide? I'm delighted that you did. I love hearing the lyrics to these songs. It's wonderful.
Well.
But you'd gone, what, close to 20 years of performing without singing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was always accompanying singers for many years,
mm-hmm.
and teaching them songs and finding the right key for them and making arrangements for them. And then I've been playing a kind of background music in saloons and salons for many years. And it when I started working in New York, which I guess was 1995, four or five, I forget now, it's been so long, I just decided, well, you know, maybe it's time. Because after all, if Louis Armstrong could sing and make records the way his voice sounded, and other singers like that, well, why can't I? So I just started doing it, and it seemed that I knew about half the lyrics to most songs in my head, even without trying, because I'd heard them for so many years. So I got out the music and started reading the lyrics and learning them and putting them in my key and having great fun with it, because I was using a part of my brain that hadn't been tapped before.
Well, I bet it opened up a whole new type of song, too, a song where maybe it wasn't like the most exciting piano solo type of melody, but the lyric was so wonderful that if you put the melody and the lyric together, you've got a perfect little package.
Well, that's true. That's very true. And another thing is, when I started playing this vintage music in public,
mm-hmm.
it was enough to just play the piano. And because there were a lot of people around that knew what the words were, and it sort of was subliminal. They all knew, oh, this is that wonderful song, Stay As Sweet As You Are. But nowadays, those songs are not 30 years old anymore. They're 60 years old, and there are fewer and fewer people who know what they are. So I'm kind of going back to them and reintroducing them because it makes more sense. I don't know why it took me 20 years to realize that the lyrics are going to they're going to touch people in a completely different way.
Exactly. Maybe sing another of your discoveries for us.
Oh, all right. Well, this has become a recent favorite, even though it was written in 1935. It was written by two band leaders and someone else. Ted Fiorito wrote this with Billy Hill and Daniel Richman, and it's called Alone at a Table for Two. The usual time, the usual place, the usual orchids and wine. But there's a strange smile on everyone's face. They know you're no longer mine. Alone at a table for two. Alone in our old rendezvous. The music is playing your favorite request, but I hear a blue note. The band must have guessed why I'm alone
at a table for two, pretending I am waiting for you. And even the flowers at your plate have withered. They know that we're through. I'm alone at a table for two. A check and a dime will get me my hat. I know it will always be there. I wish I could find a check for my heart, a heart that I left in your care. The music is playing your favorite request, but I hear a blue note. The band must have guessed why I'm alone at a table for two. I'm pretending I am waiting for you. And even the flowers at your plate have withered. They know that we're through. I'm alone at a table for two.
Wonderful. That's Peter Mitten at the piano and vocals in our studio, and he has a new CD called Grand Piano. And what's the best place for you to find old songs if you're not lucky enough to run into a surviving composer who can take it out of his trunk for you? Do you go with sheet music, old records?
Yes. Well, there's the public library, folks.
Is that a good place to find songs?
Yes, it is. You'd be surprised what they have. But I would suggest looking into any old piano bench you see in anybody's house.
That's
just
a good idea.
Ransacking the piano bench.
Now, do you like to learn songs from sheet music when you can?
Oh, yes. Well, I pick up very easily by ear, but I always believe in going back to the source, because sometimes the way performers recorded songs in the old days, they were taking great liberties, and you're not quite sure what the melody really was supposed to be in the first place. And so I've learned a lot by going back to the original music.
We'll hear more of our concert and interview with Peter Mitten in the second half of our show. Peter Mitten performs in San Francisco at Mason's Restaurant in the Fairmount Hotel. He returns to the Carlyle Hotel in Manhattan in January. Mitten's latest solo album is called Grand Piano, and it's on the label Premier Recordings. I'm Terry Grossen. This is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, and by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more forgotten songs from the 20s and 30s, sung and played by Peter Mitten. He's helping to revive the music of Dana Suisse, who was known as the Girl Gershwin. Mitten wrote the liner notes for the Suisse reissue we're listening to now. Thank you. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Peter Minton, who is reviving forgotten songs from movies and shows of the 20s and 30s. He's a veritable encyclopedia of old songs, not to mention a virtuoso pianist. He divides his time between San Francisco, where he performs at the Fairmont Hotel, and Manhattan, where he performs at Bemelman's Bar at the Carlyle Hotel. You know, I not only admire your playing and your repertoire, but your memory. I mean, you actually know most of these songs, don't you?
What city are we in? Well, I'm glad you think so, because I don't keep up to date. Obviously, I'm not up to date with the topical songs and with songs from today's Broadway. And so sometimes people come to me on the job and they say, "Will you play Cats?" Then they say, "Oh, you don't know that well. Will you play Phantom?" "Well, I don't know that either." And so they go away and they say, "You know, this guy doesn't know anything." Now, they don't know that I can play five songs from the film Top Hat, or I can play the score from Follow Through from the 1920s, or I can play the songs from Here Goes the Bride, which is a show that ran seven performances in 1931. Johnny Green and Edward Heyman wrote it, but I don't know Cats.
Let's do another song that's a current favorite of yours.
Well, I've been a big fan of the team of Matt Gordon and Harry Revel, who were born a year apart, both in Europe, and they died a year apart in the United States, and they both were very successful. In fact, Matt Gordon won the Academy Award writing with Harry Warren for the song You'll Never Know. But before he was teamed with Mac, I mean, before Mac was teamed with Harry Warren, he was teamed with another Harry named Harry Revel, and they wrote some big hits for Paramount and Fox movies like Did You Ever See a Dream Walking? Well, I did. Or With My Eyes Wide Open, I'm Dreaming. May I Be the Only One to Say I... These are by Gordon and Revel, and I found a piece that they wrote from a film called Stolen Harmony with Ben Burney, and I just think it's so great. I don't know why this song didn't go anywhere, but it's especially appropriate for people that are just newly engaged, okay? Everybody's talking about us, baby. Saying we're kinda, sorta, that is, you know what I mean. It's not right to tell them they're all wrong. Let's not keep it a secret any longer, baby. Let's spill the beans. Let's let the cat right out of the bag. Let's tell the world it isn't a gag, and that we are really and truly in love. What a glorious feeling. Let's spill the beans. Let's tell the gang on Saturday night. Tell all the folks I'm treating you right. That I'll be your something or other in law. I've got a place all picked out, all slicked out for you. Let's set a date for your removal. Hope it meets with your approval. Let's spill the beans. Tell everyone we're looking at rings, looking at tags on tiniest things. They'll know what that means. Let's spill the beans. A place all picked out, all slicked out for you. Let's set a date for your removal. Hope it meets with your approval. Let's spill the beans. Tell all the folks I'm looking at rings, looking at tags on tiniest things. They'll know what that means. Let's spill the beans.
Wonderful. Play me something that you used to listen to when you were very young.
Well, one of the biggest influences on me when I was a kid was the piano music of Fats Waller. My parents were playing his records when I was growing up, and I just thought this was the greatest. And I think one of the reasons I like his style is that it's got such great driving rhythm. Usually the bass is so strong, well, like in this Keepin' Out of Mischief Now. So I like the bass, and then in the treble, it's always kind of lacy and... So it's sort of a combination of the masculine bass and a kind of a feminine treble. So it's getting in touch with your feminine and masculine sides on the piano.
The yin and yang of Fats Waller.
You said it.
Did you play this as a child?
I was trying to, desperately trying to.
Were you frustrated a lot? Because that's really hard.
Well, I found a wonderful teacher named Lee Green who had played dance band piano in the 1930s. And he taught me for a few months and gave me some really good practical pointers on playing pop music as only someone who had played it before could teach. And so that was a big help to me.
My guest is Peter Minton. His latest solo piano album is called Grand Piano. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Peter Minton is at the piano. He specializes in forgotten songs from the 20s and 30s. Now, you've been resurrecting a lot of music from the 20s and 30s. There's one composer that you've been particularly focusing on. In fact, you're behind a reissue of her work that's coming out. And I'm talking about the composer Dana Suess, who is really virtually unknown to most people. Tell us something about her, and then I'll ask you to play something by her.
Well, she was a piano virtuoso that came out of Kansas City, and she was also composing as well as playing piano recitals. So as a child, she was performing some of her own works in the teens and 20s. Then she and her mother decided to get serious and move to New York and try to make it big in selling some of her her salon music. But it just wasn't working out. They moved to New York in the late 20s, and it was hard to sell the kind of little novelettes she was writing. And so she tried writing in the jazz idiom, which was kind of new to her, and all of a sudden she made it really big in 1931 with, for one thing, was this song. Ho-hum, spring is here now. Ho-hum, skies are very clear now. Not long after that, she wrote this beautiful ballad. I reach for you like I'd reach for a star, worshipping you from afar, living with my silent love. Now, both those songs were written with another young colleague named Edward Heyman, the fellow who wrote with Johnny Green and many others, too. And so she got the nickname of Sally of Tin Pan Alley or the Girl Gershwin because at the same time that she was writing these pop tunes, she was also writing music for Paul Whiteman for his concerts, and she was doing short instrumental pieces for him in the genre of Groffé and Gershwin because Paul Whiteman was of the feeling that American audiences were modern and up-to-date, and they didn't have time for long symphonies, so give them something kind of short. And that was one of the theories behind Rhapsody in Blue, and that was a terrific success. And after Rhapsody in Blue, everybody else was trying to emulate that. And
You actually met Dana Suess.
Yes, I became very close to her. I wrote her a fan letter in a about 1970 when I was 20. And she didn't believe it. She couldn't believe anyone was interested because she sort of had thrown in the towel and thought she was giving up on Broadway and pop music and symphonic music. But then I sent her a tape of myself playing the piano, and she played it for her new husband and her friends from New York City. And she said, "Listen to this. Do you know who this is?" And they all thought it was Dana. It sounded like the way she played. And she said, "No, it's this nut from San Francisco. It's this kid named Peter Minton. And he plays like I do, the clinkers and all." And so she invited me to visit her in 1973. I finally did. I went to Connecticut and stayed with her for a couple of weeks and got to play her Steinway, on which Oscar Levant and George Gershwin and all the greats had played on when she had it in the 30s. And
which you now own, I should throw in.
She sold me the piano a few years later.
She passed away in 1987, and it's been something of a mission for you, I think, to keep her music alive. Would you play something by her, an excerpt of one of her compositions?
Well, yes. Here's an example of the jazz idiom that she threw into the instrumental work Blue Moonlight, which Paul Whiteman introduced on the Kraft Music Hall. And this little section of Blue Moonlight is called Capriccioso a la Jazz. You have to buy the CD.
And that's your CD. You play this on your new CD, Grand Piano.
That's right. And that has piano solos of music of the 20s and 30s. I have some Ellington I play on there, and three numbers by Dana Suisse, and I play Jerome Kern and some Mack Gordon and Harry Revel, and show music, film music, piano music.
Let me get back to Dana Suisse for a second. She has a couple of pretty well-known songs that she wrote. Maybe you could do an excerpt of those for us.
Oh, sure. Well, here are probably her two best-known popular songs. Billy Rose and Irving Kale wrote the lyric to this one that was on the hit parade for 5 weeks in 1937. The night is young and you're so beautiful here among the shadows, beautiful lady. Open your heart. But actually, the song that brings in the most money to her estate happens to be one that she wrote with Edward Heyman in 1937. You ought to be in pictures. You're wonderful to see. You ought to be in pictures. Oh, what a hit you would be. You're handsome as a gable. You're healthy as a mix. You surely should be able to photograph like Richard Dix. Now, perhaps some of these names aren't too familiar to your listening audience today. But anyway, that's music by Dana Suisse.
One more thing about Dana Suisse. You've been reviving her music. Is it catching on? Is there interest?
Well, I've been trying to promote her music since 1970. So that is more than 25 years now. And during her lifetime, I was trying. In fact, it it did. And my enthusiasm encouraged her to stage a Carnegie Hall concert of her own music in 1974, of her concert music. And it got good notices in the press, and it was a good thing for her to do. In fact, it has been that concert has been reissued on CD on the Premier label just very recently, and it's conducted by Frederick Fennell.
And Cy Coleman, the composer, is at the piano.
Yes, Cy Coleman was a great concert pianist before he was a Broadway writer, and he was the soloist on this concert, and he and Dana Suisse were good friends. So anyway, that has finally come about after her death. And she always used to say, you know, no one will know about me till I'm dead. That's always the way it is. And I guess she was right.
You recently did a concert in conjunction with a series of movies from the 20s and 30s being screened at the Film Forum, a repertory house in New York. So you did forgotten songs from movie musicals of the 20s and 30s.
Yes.
And one of the songs that you did was Fifth Avenue. Now, the person who programs and directs this repertory cinema composed a new series of contemporary Fifth Avenue lyrics.
Well, do you know the old song, Fifth Avenue?
Not really.
Well, I'd like you to hear what it's like. It's from the Shirley Temple movie, once again, a movie from 1940 called Young People, in which she wasn't exactly very young anymore. But it's a cute song by Matt Gordon and Harry Warren, and I don't know why it's not done more, because it's one of those great songs about New York. Hop a bus, take a car, hail a cab, and there you are on Fifth Avenue. Old Fifth Avenue. Every Joe, every Jane walks along that dreamer's lane on Fifth Avenue. That's Fifth Avenue. Where they stop, window shop, and their hopes are so high, pricing rings, pretty things that they can't afford to buy. But they smile, they don't care, everyone's a millionaire when you're strolling on Fifth Avenue. Easter bonnets, smart and gay, New York's finest on St. Patrick's Day. Flags are flying, see them wave, soldiers marching in memory of the brave. There are shouts, there are cheers, mingled with a mother's tears on Fifth Avenue, old Fifth Avenue. All the world's on parade, where the fashions are made on Fifth Avenue. That's Fifth Avenue. Fancy shops, small cafes, a cathedral, and then Central Park, Cartier's, and Woolworth's 5 and 10. What a street, what a thrill. Say, you haven't lived until you've been strolling on Fifth Avenue. You've been strolling on Fifth Avenue.
That's a wonderful song. Now I'm going to ask you to do the new lyric that was written by Bruce Goldstein of the Film Forum.
Well, yes.
Did you have a hand in this too, in the writing of
this? Well, sort of. Bruce was listening to me play at Bemelman's Bar a week before the concert, and I threw in the word Starbucks as a joke in this Fifth Avenue song, and the wheels started turning in his mind until he came up with this. Oh, it's hard to ignore the enormous Warner store on Fifth Avenue, New Fifth Avenue. There is laughter and tears and the cheapest souvenirs on Fifth Avenue. That's Fifth Avenue. There's a Walmart and Wiz where once there stood Saks, Bergdorf Goodman's in biz, but they're serving up Big Macs. It's so great and so grand, why, it's just like Disneyland when you're strolling down Fifth Avenue. See the Starbucks everywhere, Barnes and Nobles and a Blimpies here and there, tacky t-shirts, Donald Trump,
how the plaza's turned into a dump. Shopping malls tall and proud draw the bridge and tunnel crowd to Fifth Avenue, New Fifth Avenue. See the library lions wearing advertising signs on Fifth Avenue, New Fifth Avenue. Tourist traps, baseball caps, such a stunning array. Singles swing and they sway at the swell Hard Rock Cafe. I'll admit it has changed, everything's a bit deranged when you're strolling down Fifth Avenue, rollerblading down Fifth Avenue.
That's wonderful, and I think if Bruce Goldstein decides to get out of the movie business, he could start writing songs.
He's a quick study.
Peter Minton recorded in the Fresh Air studio. Minton performs in San Francisco at Mason's Restaurant in the Fairmount Hotel. He returns to the Carlyle Hotel in Manhattan in January. Our concert was recorded last spring before the release of his solo piano album, Grand Piano. The CD is out now. Grand Piano is on the label Premier Recordings. This is Fresh Air. It's been a year since the Million Man March on Washington. To mark the anniversary, Spike Lee has made a movie about the march called Get on the Bus. Financing for the film came from 15 prominent African Americans, including actors Danny Glover and Wesley Snipes. Our film critic John Powers has a review.
Say what you will about Spike Lee, and most people have said something, he has always had a knack for being where the action is. Heckling the Knicks opponents at Madison Square Garden, cranking out famous commercials for Nike, and most important, opening Hollywood's doors to black filmmakers. Nobody has done more to put African-American life on the screen, so it seems almost natural that, on the first anniversary of the Million Man March, Lee should have a new movie on the subject. It's called Get on the Bus, and it's the story of a group of black men who charter a bus from Los Angeles to the march in Washington, D.C. There's a wide-eyed young enthusiast and a worldwide philosopher, played by Ossie Davis. There's a flamboyantly egotistical actor and a half-white cop who keeps being challenged about his true blackness. There's a deadbeat dad and his gangbanger son, handcuffed together by court order. The bus is so microcosmic that there's even a gay couple. Over the course of their three-day ride, this group comes to know one another. They talk and laugh and sing and fight. We see their rifts and open wounds. We see the religious, sexual, and economic antagonisms that divide these men. But we also see the spirit that brings them together, a spirit clear from the opening scene when they're greeted by their driver, played by Charles Dutton.
If you want to go to the Slauson Swap Meet, the Brentwood Mansion, the L.A. Zoo, or the La Brea Tar Pits, then your black ass is on the wrong bus. This bad boy is going to Washington, D.C. for the Million Man March. My name is George. This is my partner, Craig.
Say that on some ground.
Now, we're going to get you to and from the march safely within 6 days.
We hope.
There are some rules we must observe.
Right.
One, and this is probably for you, Pop, no drinking alcohol while on this bus. Two, no smoking. And three, and most importantly in this, I ain't bullshitting about no using or possessing illegal substances. Now, if you need to use the bathroom, there's one in the back. I trust that none of you men are women, because if you are, you're some of the ugliest broads I ever seen in my life.
Get on the Bus was made for $2.5 million, Lee's smallest budget since She's Gotta Have It. Curiously enough, This lack of money seems to have liberated his imagination, for this film has an exuberant simplicity missing from much of his recent work. No American director is better at showing people having fun, and Lee lets his characters cut loose, boasting about women, bickering over nicknames, or turning on a rich black Republican. The movie is carried along by wonderful acting, especially the work of two rising black stars. As the light-skinned cop Gary, Roger Guinvers Smith is the film's most complicated character, a decent man whose ingratiating smile hides reservoirs of anger. He radiates edgy intensity. Even better is Andre Brauer from the TV series Homicide. Brauer plays Flip, the cocksure actor who saunters through the world as if it were his own private movie set. As long as it's content to capture life on the wing, Get on the Bus is terrific. But Lee has never been a filmmaker to leave the obvious unspoken. He fills the movie with subplots designed to make points about crime, homophobia, and being a good father. Every few minutes, we get an inspirational speech about black unity, black empowerment, black men taking charge of their lives. The problem isn't that these ideas are off base. It's that they're truisms. As for the film's politics, they're strangely vague. There's a bow-tied Farrakhan supporter traveling on the bus, and he's the only character who never really talks. It's as if Lee doesn't want to do anything with him, for fear of weighing down the movie's uplift with controversial elements. In the end, what you remember about Get on the Bus is not its uplifting message or its account of the Million Man March. No, what's memorable about this movie is its collection of vivid characters, some touching, some amusing, all filled with life. For in the America of 1996, few things could be more radical or audacious than a film in which black men are not street-smart killers or wisecracking heroes, but simply ordinary men trying to make sense of their lives.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue.
Listen.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineers this week are Audrey Bentham, Bob Purdick, Chris Fraley, and Richard Parker. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Cherie Gross.
I know that I can stand.
I know that I can stand.
No matter what comes my way.
No matter what may come my way.
Jesus, my life.
My life is in your hands.
Let's sing it together.
Listen. You don't have to worry.
And don't you be afraid.
And don't you be afraid.
Joy cometh in the morning.
Joy comes in.
Troubles, they don't last always.
Troubles, they don't last always.
Ah, for there's a friend named Jesus.
For there's a friend named Jesus.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Morrow, publisher of the new cookbook, Baking with Julia. Savor the joys of baking with America's best bakers, based on the PBS series hosted by Julia Child. This is NPR, National Public Radio.